The views expressed in this program are not necessarily those of FMR. Fine Music Radio. Book Choice with Paige Nick on FMR.
We're back. It's Monday, and we're bringing you all the books you need to know about. My name is Paige Nick. You are tuned into Book Choice right here on Fine Music Radio, the very best place to be on a Monday just before lunchtime. And we've got some amazing books to bring you today. I was just looking at our lineup for today's show and I noticed something kind of interesting, and it was completely accidental. But every single book that we're reviewing on today's show is South African, and that's not really such a big deal. We really do focus on a lot of the incredible South African talent we've got here. But more importantly and more interestingly, every single book on today's show comes from an award winner. And how incredible is that? So each of these authors have won awards for the work they've done in the past, not necessarily as writers, so hang in there and you'll see what I'm talking about. Most of them as writers, but some of them have won awards in other spheres. Each of these authors is award-winning in their own right, potentially not for these books yet because they've only just come out, but these are highly anticipated titles because of these authors' award-winning status, or these musicians' award-winning statuses, or these poets' award-winning statuses. Okay, enough rambling. Let me give you a little overview of what we've got coming. Beryl Eichenberger is here. She is reviewing the latest from award-winning literary fiction author Imran Kuvadia. These only come up every 3 or 4 years or so, and they're very highly anticipated. I have this next up on my to-read pile, and I can't wait. After that is another big literary-hitting, award-winning author, Michiel Haines. And Beverly Ruiz-Miller is here, and she's going to be telling us about that. It's called The Wildest Beauty. So these two literary fiction authors often bring out a novel in the same year, which is a big deal, and then they kind of up against each other at the awards. So I'm very curious this year to see which book comes out tops in all the awards, and I'm very curious about the reviews from Beryl and Beverly so we can see what they've got to say about these massive titles. After that, I'm bringing you a review for a change, and I'm bringing you a review of a musical memoir. It's called Imperfect Harmony, and it's a name you might recognize if you're a big muso and you love your cello. His name is Kutlwano Masote, and he's an award-winning musician. Well, he's a lot more than that too, but you'll have to wait for the review to hear about that. He's brought out a memoir. It's called Imperfect Harmony, and I'll be reviewing that. After that, we've got a really big Afrikaans feature. Danny Maree is a very famous poet, South African poet, and he's just brought out a new title. I got to say, the cover of this is astonishing. I absolutely love it. If you've heard of Kanamaya, he's a very famous South African artist, and he has brought out this cover. So an incredibly talented poet who has brought out a new book with an incredibly talented artist creating the cover of that book. So Helena is here, and she's going to be talking about that book, but she's also going to land on a couple of other Afrikaans titles. So Danny Maree, an award-winning poet and musician, and Anton Kannemeyer, who is the award-winning illustrator of that book. After that, we go to some nonfiction with Twanji Kalula. He's chatting about some politics. I think we're going to get a lot of political books out this year. It's an election year. Twanji is reviewing Mafia Land by Kyle Cowan, who's a journalist, award-winning journalist. So there we go. And then we're going to wrap up the show with Riley Herbert Henry, and he's reviewing a book that I actually just finished reading. It's called Cape Fever. It's by Nadia Davids. She's a South African author. She lives in America. So this has come out for her as a big international debut. It's launching in America. It's also now launched in South Africa, and it's already a bestseller. It's only just out. I've read a ton of reviews. I've read the book myself. It's pretty incredible. In fact, it borders on astonishing. I absolutely loved it. And so that's another literary fiction piece. So those are all our books on today's show. In between that, we're going to bookend all these reviews with some very fine music. This is Fine Music Radio after all. And all our music has been curated and inspired by Mzu Makeda, who's behind the scenes in this show, pulling the whole thing together, dealing with all of us crazy reviewers and all these books and all these ideas. And he makes us sound amazing. Thank you, Mzu. We're so lucky to have you. So I think that's everything. Oh, what I haven't told you is that this show is sponsored by Exclusive Books, and we absolutely love them. They're our very good friends, and without them, we wouldn't be able to do this show. So I've just got to extend my gratitude to them. I also need to extend my gratitude to them for having these incredible stores. I was in an exclusive books at the waterfront the other day, and I was there for about an hour, and it's just such a joy to browse, pick up books, look at the books, smell the books, read the blurbs, and decide what you want to read next. That was where I got the Cape fever from. So thank you, Exclusive Books. We love you. We love what you do, and thank you for partnering with us. Right, that's enough of a blurb. We're going to play a track first, and then we're going to go on to our first reviews, The Enemy of the People by Imran Kubadia and The Wildest Beauty by Michiel Hands. But first, this is I Told You So by Vota Kellerman. It's a great track. I Told You So by Vota Kellerman, and I Told You So, it's a great track. I can say I told you so. You are tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio. My name is Paige Nick. I am an author. I love to read. I think more than an author, I'm a reader. I love to read. I also run a book club on Facebook. It's called the Good Book Appreciation Society, and we have 25,000 members. So if you enjoy this show, if you enjoy reading, if you enjoy chatting about what you're reading, come on over to Facebook and search for the Good Book Appreciation Society. Right, so let's get on with the show. Beryl Eichenberger is here. And as I mentioned, she's reviewing a massive title that's just launched by award-winning literary fiction author Imran Kuvadia. It's called The Enemy of the People. Hi, Beryl. I can't wait to read this one. I want to hear your review first, which is going to whet my appetite for cracking the spine and getting into the first page.
Truth versus corruption. You'd think that truth would out, but we're talking about South Africa here, with a focus on Cape Town. State capture, a statement, excuse the pun, that we are all familiar with. And in Imran Kuvadia's new novel, An Enemy of the People, we are faced with his take on that time. Democracy or kleptocracy? I leave you, the reader, to decide. But Kuvadia's incisive, acerbic, and often satirical novel points firmly to the latter. His layered character's empirical observation is a tapestry of social commentary, tragic, heartbreaking, and compelling. Kuvadia is one of South Africa's award-winning writers, directing the writing program at the University of Cape Town. He is unafraid to speak his mind, to draw the reader into the milieu of political shenanigans, the immorality of our mad, mad world. He crafts a story that will leave you saddened, angered, thoughtful. Mac Mackagee is a tax collector, an honest man with high principles, always the pessimist. And why wouldn't he be? Determined to find the billions siphoned off by government officials, associates, and whoever else could make a case, all sanctioned by the then president. Mac's minister is also one of the good guys, with a trusted team, well, mostly, uncovering the trail. Mac's wife, Tijal, is a lawyer with equally high principles. But when she is asked to defend young revolutionary Apollis, accused of arson and toppling statues, you get the picture, it is not long before the intersections between the two appear and the couple realize they are caught in between. A chess game where the pawns are moved as the politics dictate, and being honest is not the best policy. Kuvadia weaves the story against a background of Musemburg, sun and sand, and this family caught up in their own downfall. A family that are tightly knit, parents wanting the best for their two sons, Shiv the older, questioning, independent, and Rogan, younger, more withdrawn with a medical condition. This is the softer side of his narrative, but vitally important as the story plays out, because of course they are all at risk. A reclusive baker is a delightful adjunct. Alongside that is the barely disguised newspaper owner, supporter of Apollis, with numerous grudges, determined to be recognized. Top echelon cops, wielding their power, and the rewards that come with toppling establishment in an activism that is of itself an enemy of the people. Kuvadia writes in short, sharp sentences, conveying beauty, absurdity, meaning and a sense of place. He captures fleeting moments, the infection of corruption, the arrogance, the obfuscators. The characters are sensitively drawn, quirky, Musemburg bohemian. With the lure of big money, it pits the good against the evil. The conspirators who outwardly seem on the level, and sadly that good has no hope of winning. He speaks with clarity as he opens that murky window on our society, the peril of being honest and seeking justice, confusion of identity, refugees, comrades at odds with the system, officialdom, gone mad. And yet, I was left with the feeling that doing the right thing, bravery and honesty, will win in the end. An Enemy of the People is written by Imran Kuvadia and published by Imuzi.
Thank you so much, Beryl. That's a very enticing storyline there. I like the themes. I like the plot. And I can't wait to dive into it. Listeners, I'll let you know what I think when I'm done, hopefully in our next show. Coming up next, we have another big award-winning fiction title here on Fine Music Radio, which is sponsored by Exclusive Books. We bring you the best books from the best bookseller. Beverly Rose Miller leapt at the opportunity to review this book because she writes some of these themes herself in her own best-selling books. Michiel Hanz has brought out The Wildest Beauty. I think we've been waiting for a new Michiel Hanz novel for maybe 3 years or so, so it's a big deal on the literary calendar. Beverly, welcome to the show, and let's hear all about The Wildest Beauty, much anticipated, by Michiel Hanz. Hi, Beverly. Tell us all about The Wildest Beauty.
South African writer Michiel Hanz has released his 11th novel, The Wildest Beauty, a phrase penned by the great and doomed World War I poet Wilfred Owen. There was nothing, of course, beautiful about that terrible war, except perhaps the bonding of men who fought together in unbearable conditions over four frightful years. Haynes can be a witty writer. I loved his parody of the pretentious side of Tuscany in A Sportful Malice 10 years ago. This is absolutely nothing like that. It is intense, emotional, frank, and at times painful. Yet his skilled hand delivers a prose that is easy to read, despite its flavor of a different, more formal era. A group of young men from the Cape, including Leafy Stellenbosch, sign up for the war in Europe for different reasons, although a driving force, as always, is the rising sap of young men spoiling to get involved. Young men go to war while old men weep. I remember writing in my own book on the Boer War that ended in 1902. At that time, it was the largest and most expensive overseas war Britain had ever fought, including Crimea. Yet even its figures faded next to those of the First World War, which began and ended in bafflement over why it was fought at all. Central to this story are non-identical twins, the exquisitely beautiful Charlie and the slightly less spectacular Daniel, who realizes he is gay, which brings a coolness between these brothers who have lived as intimately as only twins may ever understand. The larger part of the book, 350 pages, takes place during the end of their school days. They're volunteering and meeting other men who will become their family in war. The voyage to Europe, the usual incomprehensible back and forth of army training and preparation. The beautiful straight Charlie has been conned by a self-loathing posh homosexual, Andrew, who drives a barrier between the brothers. Daniel realizes how toxic Andrew is when he sets out to destroy his friend, nicknamed Meerkat, a cheeky man who Andrew had abused. Wars, despite women combatants today, are primarily male affairs. In The Wild Beauty of Delville Wood, in the Somme, such men, gay or otherwise, discover who they really are, the stuff of strength or cowardice, the easy destruction of the soft machine that is us humans. Friends one day, corpses by nightfall, buried quickly before another day dawns when more will die. If you can't manage homoerotic books, this is probably not for you. Long ago, Haynes told me that what others thought didn't bother him and lived his own truth. I agreed with him then and now. The Wildest Beauty portrays that quality within us all, which may happen to take on different forms, more worthy than the ugliness of fighting any war for personal gain and power. I found it impressive. It has stayed with me in the way that so many World War I books do, never forgetting the great non-fiction book All Quiet on the Western Front by Erich Maria Remarque, who was a German veteran, a reminder that the enemy without may be less dangerous than the one within, a sobering thought during this anxious global time. It is well recommended. The Wildest Beauty by Michael Haynes is published by Jonathan Ball.
War, huh? What's it even good for? Zoo and I were chatting about war songs. That one came up. And he mentioned this one. It's Mars, the Bringer of War, and it's performed by the BBC Philharmonic Orchestra. So we thought after that review of a book about war that we'd give it a bit of a play. Over to you, Mzu. Thank you, Mzu. That was Mars, the Bringer of War. It's from Gustav Holst's The Planet Suite. It's a thunderous, orchestral, massive masterpiece representing the astrological, aggressive nature of the planet. Thought it was fitting after Beverly Rose Miller has just told us about Michiel Haines' newest novel, The Wildest Beauty. I looked up this track, and it says that while it's often performed, notable recordings of this piece are by the BBC Philharmonic Orchestra, which is the one we just listened to. And that iteration of it highlights its intense driving rhythm and dramatic relentless brass and percussion, creating a menacing wartime atmosphere appropriate to Michiel Haines' novel. As I mentioned, the composer was Gustav Holst, and it was composed between 1914 and 1916. Amazing how it holds time, doesn't it? Anyway, enough about music. We're back in the books because you are tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio. My name is Paige Nick. I'm the host of today's show. I wrangle all the reviewers and we decide together what we're each going to review, what we're excited about, and we bring you our unbiased opinions on these books. So it's my turn next. I don't normally review books here. Sometimes I'll tell you what I'm reading, but a book crossed my path recently and I wanted to read it. It's a memoir and I don't often read memoir. It's called Imperfect Harmony, and it's by Kutwano Masote, who is an award-winning musician, and this is what I thought of it. I can be honest with you all, since we're all friends here. I'm not particularly knowledgeable about music. I am a book person after all, and there are only so many hours in the day. Some authors I know love to write while there's music playing. They create writing playlists for themselves or their characters, or they have Fine Music Radio on in the background while they write. I'm not that kind of author. I don't think I have enough brain cells to share the page with music. So when I write, it doesn't have to be dead quiet, but I prefer not to have music playing, and the same for when I read. However, since I started hosting this show a couple of years ago and listening to Fine Music Radio all the time, I've been trying to listen to more music, learn more about music, go to more concerts, and I've got to say my life has definitely become fuller for it. So when I saw this memoir pop up, I thought it would be a great opportunity to immerse myself in the back end of some very fine music. The irony is that as a book person, when I made the decision to learn more about music, I did so by reading about it rather than listening to it. So I think that says a lot about me, ultimately. The book I'm talking about is a memoir. It's called Imperfect Harmony. It's by Kutwano Masote. He is a world, you probably, if you're a Fine Music Radio listener, dedicated listener, you might have heard his name. He is a world-renowned cellist, a music conductor, and a radio presenter, and a radio personality. And this is his story. From growing up in a musical family in Soweto back in the 70s, he traces his roots growing up through apartheid and living through the creation of the Rainbow Nation. He tracks his parents' lives through their own political struggles and their musical achievements, which are just astonishing. Then he conducts a journey through his education into his own coming of age. And as he gets older, this becomes as much a travel memoir as it is a musical memoir. His travel as a young musician took him through France and Germany, and he got to see the whole world. He also met and worked with so many greats. The pages of this memoir are crammed with really what I found incredibly inspirational stories, from performing with Brenda Fassie to his meeting Nelson Mandela, which is a great story. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but he has a wonderful story about what happened when he met Nelson Mandela. You know, a few weeks ago, my partner Claudio and I went to see the Cape Town Philharmonic Orchestra at City Hall. And I remember sitting there watching the musicians, each with such a unique instrument. And I was fascinated by the more awkward instruments, the double bass and the French horn. And I sat there and I wondered how each of these musicians ended up choosing that specific instrument. I'm not a very musical person, as I said, so I can't imagine how that happens. So my fascination was further fueled during intermission when I saw the cases for the double bass parked in the passage. Each one was like the size of a Cadillac. And I wondered how it was a reasonable instrument to travel with, let alone play. And so I read of Kutwano's discovery and love for the cello with so much interest. He started out with the violin, but all his cousins and siblings and parents played the violin as well. So he was looking for something more unique for himself, or as he says, he was looking for something cool. To quote him, he said the cello was reserved for the older boys and some girls, and to him, everyone who ever tried the cello had an air of coolness about him. Also, he was at that age where preteen boys wanted to ride bigger bikes, play with bigger toys, be as tall and big as possible as soon as possible. And obviously the cello satisfied that for him. This is a wonderful Imperfect Harmony. It's a wonderful memoir about an important life in music. But it's more than that too. It's about growing up in apartheid South Africa and going from Soweto to stage at a time where that just seemed near impossible. Imperfect Harmony is a memoir by Kutlwano Masote with a foreword by Mokale Kopeng. It's published by Kara Books. That's Kara, X-A-R-R-A. And it's listed for sale at 340 Rand on the Kara Books website. Next up, we're moving into a bit of an Afrikaans segment. Helene Kutsir is a publicist at Pan Macmillan, but even more than that, she is a voracious reader, and she likes to read a lot of Afrikaans titles. She reads very widely, fiction, non-fiction, even poetry. So today she's going to be reviewing a couple of Afrikaans titles for us, but because, and I don't know if you know this or not, the 21st of March is World Poetry Day. So Helene decided to dig into some poetry, some Afrikaans poetry, and this is where she started. She started with a book called Ekkes Nie Dani. It's by Dani Maree, which is a name you'll recognize if you're into Afrikaans fiction, music, and poetry. And welcome to the show, Helene. Tell us all about the Afrikaans titles you've been reading.
21 Maart is Wêreld Poësie Dag. En daarom fokus ek vandag op nuwe digbundels wat onlangs verskyn het. Ek sou graag vir 'n uur lank oor elk wou gesels, maar helaas, daarvoor het ons nie tyd nie. Eerstens, kortliks, Atrium deur Marlie Schubert is 'n moet hê en moet lees bundel as jy van digkuns hou. Sy is een van daardie digters wat veel meer lof verdien as wat haar toekom en hierdie geskenk bundel wat net betyds vir haar 80ste verjaarsdag verskyn het, is een van daardie boeke wat ek vir al die boekwurms in my lewe wil gee. Haar werk strek vanuit die 70s tot nou en met die lees van hierdie bundel het ek opnuut opgewonde geraak oor die waarde van toeganklike lekker lees poësie. En gepraat van toeganklike poësie. Daar is min vreugde soos die genot van jou gunsteling skrywer wat 'n nuwe boek aankondig. En daardie vreugde kom my toe met die publikasie van Ekkes Nie Dani, 'n versamelbundel met die hoogtepunte uit Dani Maree se loopbaan. Kom ek vertel eers die storie agter die storie. Dani Maree het homself oor die jare in verskeie forme gevestig, maar die gedaante waarin hy ten nouste tot reg kom is as digter. Sy vier digbundels verwoord die bestaan van middelklas Afrikaners in die moderne eeuw op 'n manier wat geen ander kuns dit reg kry om te doen nie. Sy obsessie met ander mense se werk, veral ander kunstenaars se kuns, help die leser om met elke gedig te verstaan wat hy bedoel, want jy het dit ook al gesien of geproef ervaar. Sy vierde digbundel, Ek en Jy Bestaan Nie, het in 2024 verskyn en is verlede jaar met die heel eerste Breitenbach prys vir poësie bekroon. Sy oeuvre is meesterlik tot 'n eenmanstuk genaamd Ek is nie Dani verwerk, wat by die Woordfees gedebuteer het verlede jaar, met die meester van Afrikaanse akteurs Albert Pretorius in die hoofrol. Daar is gewoon nie genoeg ure in die dag vir my om vir luisteraars te vertel hoe versot ek op hierdie produksie was nie. En groot was my vreugde dus toe Dani Maree onlangs die nuus deel dat die toneelstuk weer op die planke gaan wees. En beter nog, dat daar 'n versamelbundel met al die verse uit die toneelstuk plus een bonusgedig gaan verskyn. Ek is nie daar nie, word uitgegee deur Flyleaf Publishing en beland net betyds vir die herlewing by die KKNK. Dit bevat al die gedigte uit die toneelstuk en vertel 'n narratiewe verhaal wat strek van Dani se eerste bundel tot sy jongste. Die enigste nuwe werk in die bundel is 'n gedig met die titel Ek voel misverstaan deur ChatGPT. En daarmee wys Dani Maree dat hy steeds, na al die jare, dink en woel met dit wat rondom hom aangaan. In Alfred Schaffer se voorwoord som hy dit mooi op. Dani Maree se werk is van die begin af aards, weemoedig en speel hom konsekwent af in die hier en nou, in die konkrete, werklike wêreld. By Maree is daar geen abstraksies of fantasiewêrelde nie. Die digter probeer nie iemand wees wat hy nie is nie. En dus is die liriese ek in hierdie oeuvre wit, Afrikaans en man en neem hy kennis van sy posisie, soms met 'n aangrypende kwesbaarheid. En luisteraars, dit is daardie kwesbaarheid wat my keer op keer byval wanneer ek Dani Maree se werk lees. Ek smeek almal om Ek is nie Dani te probeer kyk, maar ook om Ek is nie Dani te lees. Sit daarmee, kuier met die woorde. Hierdie bundel is 'n instant classic en hoort in elke huis waar woordliefhebbers woon.
Thank you so much, Helene. I want to remind you, listener, as Helene said, the 21st of March is World Poetry Day. I am a person who doesn't read very much poetry. I wish I did. I don't have a very good poetry brain. I'm more of a fiction brain. But I plan on dipping into a little poetry this coming month just to celebrate World Poetry Day. Somebody who I follow, a great poet who I find him so accessible. He's very funny. His name is Brian Bilston. I follow him on Facebook and he publishes a poem, I think, every day. And he makes me laugh. He makes me smile. I really enjoy it. Also, to celebrate World Poetry Day, I want to tell you about another group on Facebook today. A lot of award-winning authors and a lot of Facebook groups. This one's called the Rhyme Share Poetry Club. I belong to it. They have over 35,000 members. It's a massive group, and people share their favorite poems all the time. I really enjoy it. Every now and then, one comes up on my feed, and I really enjoy reading poetry. I'm trying to read a little bit more of it and see if I can understand it. And there are lovely conversations about all the poems that people are posting. And there are a lot of people on the group. It's run by Kate Sidley, who's a very talented author and reader and reviewer. And she's clearly got a poetry brain. And there are a lot of great poets on the group, and they're always commenting. And I find it fascinating and very educational. So that's the Rhyme Share Poetry Club, and that's on Facebook. If you are a poet, or like reading poetry, or like me, would like to read more poetry. Right, back to the show, because there's so much to talk about. Before our next song, we've got one more review, and we're turning to nonfiction. This is a political year. We've got a big election coming up, so I think there are going to be a lot of politics going on. Twangi Kalula, he's our resident kind of business book and politics book reviewer. He has read Mafia Land, which is by Carl Cowan, who is a political journalist, among other things, award-winning political journalist, among other things. And so Twangi is chatting to us about Mafia Land by Kyle Cowan. Welcome to the show, Twangi.
If you're involved in any illicit activity, you don't want to get caught in the crosshairs of Kyle Cowan. He is undoubtedly one of the country's most determined investigative journalists, and as part of News24's award-winning investigative team, he has drawn our attention to many of the dark forces that try to undermine our state and slow down the delivery of essential services to those who need them most. So in a very interesting book, Cowan has collated many of the top stories of corruption and capture that we read about each day. Mafia Land and Inside South Africa's Darkest Cartels shows us how endemic crime has become in the public and private sector. It is such an ordinary part of our lives, if you think about it. We plan for crime and we even plan around it. But when you take a step back and look at how wide the net of organized crime has been cast in our society, it truly reads like a horror novel. Now, a few years ago, I discussed the author's previous book, which was focused on Eskom, and he painted a very bleak picture of how easy it is for an established state institution to fall victim to coordinated crime networks and decay. And I remember naively hoping that it was just a relatively isolated case. Surely it couldn't happen anywhere else. But beyond Eskom and even the Guptas, there are many cartels seeking to undermine service delivery by redirecting funds into their own pockets. And these cartels have infiltrated everything from water infrastructure and nightlife and healthcare to construction, mining, and even transportation. And it is important to remember that almost every cartel involves bad actors from law enforcement, from the government, and from the private sector. In South Africa, organized crime truly feels like a group project, and it's scoring an A+. Now, Mafia Land provides an overview of over 10 different cartels currently operating in South Africa and how they all use similar tactics to ensure that they remain a fixture in our lives. Now, with all the commissions currently on the go, it can be incredibly difficult to keep track of all the names involved, and I know that I struggle with that. But thankfully, this book make sure that important names and organizations are laid out simply and given color so that we can better understand who is operating in the shadows and get a sense of how far their tentacles reach. I was amazed at how many names popped up again and again and again. Throughout Buffyland, the author offers reasonable explanations for many of the daily woes we complain about, such as taxi drivers driving badly, cash-in transit vans blowing up in broad daylight, and construction delays hampering almost every key national project. He also asks thought-provoking questions around the role that we all play in sustaining the status quo, and he made me question what I would do if I found myself in the life-threatening position that many whistleblowers find themselves in. Kyle Cowan has written a book with the same chilling creativity and clarity that has come to characterize his shorter-form journalism, making it a quick but informative read. And I must admit, I was so engrossed at times that I had to remind myself that I wasn't reading a great white-collar crime novel, but a true account of our actual lives in South Africa. We honestly can't make it up. But if you enjoy current affairs and journalism, or you simply want to delve a little deeper into the dynamics shaping the day's top stories, I would really suggest that you give this one a go. Mafia Land by Kyle Cowan was published by Penguin Random House and retails for 360 Rand.
Thank you so much, Twanji. Thank you, listener, for staying with us. We've got one more segment after this. We've got a really big, cool interview coming up with Nadia David. But first, we've got a song. This is Africa Song by Tutu Kruger to celebrate that all these titles are proudly South African. Welcome back. That was Africa Song by Tutu Kruger. You are tuned into Book Choice on Fine Music Radio with me, your host, Paige Nick. Our very fine sponsors are Exclusive Books. You can find every title we've mentioned here is available at your local Exclusive Books. If you don't live near an Exclusive Books, you can also find them online and they will deliver them right to your door. After the show, I want to let you know that we upload the entire show as a podcast on fmr.co.za, just in case you missed anything. You can go and have a listen back. We also create a number of what we call book shorts, where we take some of these podcasts and we put shorts of them on our podcast page. So if you heard a title or you only caught a piece of a review and you'd like to hear the rest of it, go to fmr.co.za and you can stream the whole show again. I also want to add that we've got a special gift for our listeners for this show today. When Helene Kutsir reviewed her Ekkas Nidani and the other poetry books and Afrikaans books she covered, she created a full-length podcast with a lot more information, a lot more reviews, and a lot more insight. So you can find that on fmr.co.za as well as the show. So we're into our final segment of today's show. And Riley Herbert Henry is here. He interviewed Nadia Davids on her new title. It's called Cape Fever. Nadia Davids is an award-winning author and playwright, and she's just brought out her latest new novel. She lives in America now, and she managed to land a big fancy publisher in America. This book is going to go wide. It's going to go big. And I have a feeling it's going to be on all the awards lists this year. So Riley chatted to her about the writing of the book, about her inspiration, about her process, and we bring you a really lovely interview. Welcome to the show, Nadia David and Riley Herbert Henry chatting about Cape Fever.
What happens when the person who tells your story begins to own it? Nadia David's American debut, Cape Fever, is a haunting, slow-burn psychological story set in a fictionalized version of colonial Cape Town, shimmering with heat, grief, and unspoken power. At its center are two women, a servant and her employer, bound together by letters, secrets, and a dangerous exchange of voices. Nadia Davids is an award-winning playwright and storyteller whose work interrogates history, memory, and who gets to speak. And today she joins us on Book Choice all the way from Los Angeles. Nadia, a very warm welcome to you.
Thank you, Riley, and thank you for your beautiful summary of the book.
Oh, thank you. That's very welcome. You're very welcome. I want to start first with the world of the novel. So you set Cape Fever in a fictionalized colonial city, which very much echoes sort of post-World War Cape Town. And I was wondering why this specific time and place, and how did history shape the imaginative choices you made?
So the idea for the novel came to me very suddenly and in a very quick, rapid outline. I woke up one morning and there was sort of a series of sentences that was two women, a house, one is the employer, one is the servant, and there is this sort of strange ritual by which the employer writes letters on behalf of the servant and eventually starts to encroach upon her life. But I didn't know when it was set. And it took a very long time for me to arrive at the understanding that it was a post-World War I novel, and indeed that it was even set in Cape Town, that the protagonist narrator was Surya from what I termed the Muslim Quarter. And once those things started to coalesce and come into view, it moved very quickly. What I wanted, though, was I've worked often, in fact, almost all my narrative and research preoccupations are with Cape Town, with its history and its sediment and its griefs, its multiple griefs, its multiple processes of disenfranchisement, the survival of its people, the insistence on visibility of those who have been pushed to the margins of history. Like, all of that has been very, very present in my work for a long time. And with this work, similar to with What Remains, the play, I chose to write about it in a slightly fictionalized way because I wanted to draw as freely as possible on that landscape, that topography, that history, those geographies of loss. But I also wanted to be able to take imaginative flight when I wanted to, and to not necessarily have to hew as closely to exact historical specificities. So there are all kinds of, there are different sort of folklore moments in the book as well, and those are entirely invented. And if I had been writing a strictly historical novel, I would have felt compelled to not be able to do that. So that's really, I mean, that's a very, very long answer to a very, very interesting, dense and layered question, right? Basically that I wanted to write about home and I wanted to draw on the difficult histories of home. Yeah. But I also wanted to be able to have a certain freedom within that historical remit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I fully understand where you're coming from with the sort of more speculative angle of the novel as well. We've got the grey ladies who are some of my favourite scenes happen with. I won't give too much away. The readers should read it. But they are part of my favorite scenes. But I think what really holds this novel together so well is its characters. It's got gorgeous characterization. You mentioned Surya, who is, of course, our protagonist. And she's got such wonderful agency for someone who works for someone else. And what I like about her, especially, is that she holds her cards quite close to her chest. She sort of chooses. She chooses what Hatton gets to know and what she doesn't. What really sparked it for me was when she concealed the fact that she can read and she can write.
The novel opens with a deception. I mean, the very first sentence. Very first sentences, I come to Mrs. Hassing, highly recommended. Through sentences, I tell her I cannot read. So from the outset, the deceit is set up. And it's a very, very calculated, deliberate, strategic deceit. And I thought about Surya when I was writing her. It's almost as if she has three voices for me.
Right.
There's the interior world that we as the reader have access to. And we have access to Surya's vivid, rich, feverish imagination in which she is living in what a friend described as these thin places where the veil is very thin between this world and the next. Things are porous. In another language, in sort of psychological language, we would say that she's psychically very, very in tune with all the emotional and political currents that are around her. For Soraya, that expands and becomes about the spiritual realm as well. So she has this interior world that is complex and varied and contradictory and full of very, very careful planning every single move. Her voice for Mrs. Hassing is very simple. It's very straightforward. Her voice with her family is practical, loving, orientated towards the everyday. But I mean, she's also hiding things there as well. So with me, Soraya is, yeah, she has a three-directional voice, I think, would be one way of thinking about it. And it's interesting as well, because you know, you mentioned that the story is about who gets to speak and who doesn't. But of course, in the story, Alice Hassing is taking Soraya's narrative and writing letters on her behalf to her fiancé. But we, the reader, are receiving a version of Alice Hassing that is entirely Soraya's. So I wanted to have precisely that agency, right? She occupies the space of that very particular young girl narrator, because she's only 19, very young, but she's had to be extremely canny.
I love that. That's so fascinating to me, especially the part where you mentioned that we only get to see Mrs. Hassing from Soraya's perspective, which leads me to my next question. I've mentioned they are exceptionally vividly drawn, but there is an undercurrent of consistent empathy in the story. It's this story of real understanding and sort of almost acceptance of your circumstance. And I was wondering how you wrote Mrs. Hassing from Soraya's perspective, but with that level of empathy and understanding.
Well, I think that Soraya is a deeply seeing person, and she is very empathetic, and she is able to understand the kind of currents of Mrs. Hassing's grief and her loss and the multiplicity of that. But empathy is not absolution.
Yeah.
You know, empathy is not political forgiveness. Empathy is not to, you know, she sees her as a person and as a human being, but that doesn't exonerate her from her crimes. Yeah. And it doesn't exonerate her from the kind of the situation of their relationship at all, or the sorts of extractive ways in which Mrs. Hassing deals with Soraya.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was about striking a balance between that in some ways. I mean, we only hear Mrs. Hassing's voice from her perspective right at the end, without getting too much of it. But yeah, I also look, the novel is, you know, you mentioned it sets in a post World War moment. So much of it is about loss. It's about living in the grip of empire. It's about the extractive nature of empire, how it extracts from everyone. Even these, you know, these women whose sons have gone off to fight in this war. So it's about trying to understand that, and trying to understand a character like Mrs. Hassing, who believes that she does a great deal of good in the world.
Yeah.
But also not losing sight of the damage that good can sometimes do.
Absolutely.
In her case, deliberately so, like often.
Yes, yeah. Of course. No, definitely. And with that, we leave the reader with more layers than they can unpeel in a 7-minute interview. It's Cape Fever by Nadia Davids, published by Scribner and distributed in Cape Town and South Africa by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Nadia, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Riley. Pleasure to speak.
Thank you so much, Riley, and thank you, Nadia Davids, for joining us to chat about your new novel, Cape Fever. I just finished reading this book, and I really enjoyed it. The twist at the end had me reading. I was on a flight, and I didn't lift my head. I turned every page with my jaw clenched. She really nails tension. It's a very tension-filled book, and I kind of wanted to reach into the pages and kill someone. I don't want to give any spoilers, so I won't tell you who, but she really gets you. She gets your tensions running high. And I was thinking when I read these books, a couple of other books came into my mind. So the reason I'm telling you this is because if you've enjoyed either of the two titles I'm going to mention, or if you enjoy Cape Fever, for me, these three novels sit as kind of partner reading Despite being set, all three of them, in different times in different cities, the reading of each of these three novels enhanced my reading of all of them. They share themes, sparkling writing. They're all set in South Africa, and as I mentioned, they're all written by award-winning novelists. So if you have already read Cape Fever and loved it, you might enjoy either The Lost Love of Akbar Manzil by Shabnam Khan, which we have reviewed endlessly on this show and punted endlessly. The other title you might enjoy is Bosadi by Kopano Matlua. So these three novels kind of sit together. They share themes. They share great writing. And I very much enjoyed them. And as I mentioned, reading all three of them really enhanced my reading of each of them. Cape Fever and The Lost Love of Akbar Manzil by Shabnam Khan shared ghostly appearances, religions, spirituality, a sense of the dead that walk among us. And in both of them, a house is basically a character in the book. Cape Fever and Bosadi by Kopano Matlua both explore madam and domestic worker relationships and female friendships, domestic abuse, and family trials and travails. So they kind of sit together. Another novel that I thought of while I was reading Cape Fever by Nadia Davids was The Safe Keep, which was a big Booker winner last year. So I think a lot of people will have read that. So they all kind of live in the same land. But all three of them are very fine, taut literary fiction novels, and I highly recommend them. So thank you, Riley, for bringing that to our attention and digging deeper into the author's intentions behind Cape Fever. And that kind of brings us to the end of the show. Before we wrap up, I want to tell you about something else. There is a woman I know. Her name is Pippa Smith, and she has a company called The Book Review. So if you live in the Claremont, Rondebosch area, in the southern suburbs, the Book Review company runs out of the southern suburbs. Pippa Smith, who runs the Book Review, interviews authors either at her home in Constantia, where she has the best fynbos garden you'll ever see, or she'll have it at a location like Kelvin Grove. So, for example, her next interview she's having is with Vernon Head, who is the author of the remarkable book called The Search for the Rarest Bird in the World. And that interview is taking place tomorrow, short notice, the 17th of March in the evening. And that's happening at Christ Church Constantia Church Hall. So what happens is she brings in an author, you go in there, you book your spot, you listen to a conversation with the author, she's got some snacks and some wine, and you can buy the book, ask your questions, and have a lovely social time out. After Vernon Head, the next author she'll be interviewing is another author we've actually already interviewed on the show. And if you're a cyclist after the cycle tour, you'll be interested in this one. On Saturday, the 28th of March, Pippa Smith of The Book Review will be having a morning event. It's a Saturday at 11 a.m. with Kathy Carsten, who wrote her memoir. It's called Getting Back on the Bike. I've only heard rave reviews about this. If you're a cyclist, if you interested in cycling, if you live in the southern suburbs, this is an event for you. And then Penny Hall, another award-winning author and journalist who we have reviewed on the show so many times, and she's got a new book, so we'll be reviewing her again. She's going to be at the Book Review on the 15th of April. So as you can see, every month, Pippa Smith of the Book Review has these great author interviews, and I highly recommend them. She's interviewed me before, and I've been to a couple of them. They're very, very interesting. She has a great lineup for the year. You can contact Pippa if you're interested in one of these events on Instagram. Her account is called The Book Review. And you can also email her. I'm going to say the email twice just in case you need to grab a pen. It's Pippa at The Book Review. That's The Book Review, REVUE.co.za. So you can find Pippa on Instagram at The Book Review or email her, Pippa@thebookreview.co.za. If you missed those details and you're interested in The Book Review, if you're interested in going to an event, you can always email us on Fine Music Radio and we'll get back to you. Or you can go listen to our podcast, which will be live after this show on fmr.co.za. And that brings us to the end of today's show. It was cram-packed full of stuff. I hope there was something there that interested you, that whet your appetite. There certainly was for me. I'm very excited about the Michiel Hands and the Imran Kuvadia. And I want to thank Fine Music Radio for having us. I want to thank all the reviewers on today's show, all the authors who wrote these books, all the publishers who send us these books, and you, listener. Without you, we wouldn't have a show. I hope you enjoyed it, and I look forward to chatting to you again in 2 weeks' time on Monday again. And for our fourth track on today's show, we're playing out with Love You Madly, which is very telling because we do. We love you madly. This is by Track 5. Until next time, happy reading.
So I thought you ought to know I love you madly. Better fish are in the sea. It's not the theory for me.
And that's for sure, just like
I said before. I love you madly.
If you could see the happy you and me.
Dream about so proudly, you know the breath of spring that makes me sing my love song so loudly.
Good things come to those who wait.
That's so, just relax and wait for fate to let me see the day you say to me, I love you madly, love you madly, right or wrong.
But since it's so, I thought you
ought to know. I love you madly.
If you could see the happy you and me.
The breath of spring makes me sing my love song so loudly. Good things come to those who wait. So just relax and wait for fate to let me see the day you say to me,
I love you madly.
But since it's so, I thought you ought to know.
I love you madly. Ba-ya-ba-da-ba-da.